Thanks for listening to the Friday Live Extra from NET Radio, a weekly podcast featuring arts and humanities in Nebraska, and an online-only feature we produce in conjunction with our weekly radio show, Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall. This week on our podcast, we'll get to know the latest Nebraska musician to be a contestant on The Voice. That's later in our podcast, but we start this week by talking with two authors who are part of a virtual author event on November 18th, hosted by Lincoln's Francie and Finch Bookshop. The authors are Ted Wheeler and Cassandra Montag, and we'll talk with Cassandra a little later. I'm first joined by Ted Wheeler. Ted, it's great to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show.
You're based in Omaha. You're the author of Kings of Broken Things, a collection of short fiction, as well as In Our Other Lives. And your website says a new novel due out spring 2020. I love these because everything has gotten so messed up since spring. So tell us about the timeline. What were your plans and how have they changed this year?
So the novel In Our Other Lives came out March 3rd. So I had around like 16 or 17 events booked for this spring, and I got to three of them before everything shut down. So I was luckier than some people in that I got to do my book release party, got to hang out with friends and celebrate the novel. And then about a week later, everything just shut down. So I was able to do a couple online events, but mostly it was just a bunch of like cancellations, like just kind of living through that through May, where it's like, well, I'm not going to Portland now, or I'm not reading in New York now, I'm not going to San Francisco. But eventually that all kind of ended. It was almost easier to deal with at that point.
I think a lot of people have had to pivot, of course, with all the things going on. This online event then through Francie and Finch, you've clearly then done some of these Zoom book events, or is this sort of a new thing to navigate the tech and the feel of doing online book events?
Yeah, I've done a few, but I mean, it is still pretty new. I think, you know, it just kind of depends on whether you can actually see people or if people are participating in any way. Because sometimes it just kind of feels like you're giving a lecture and you're not really sure if anyone's listening. Other times, I think it has been really good where a few of them, especially doing an event with another person where you get to see each other, you get to ask each other questions. Like that feels almost pretty normal, even though, you know, you're alone in your own rooms.
How is the event structured? The other author, as I mentioned, is Cassandra Montag. Are we doing like we're doing now, where we feature one and then the other? Are the two of you able to have some back and forth?
So the idea is to do us kind of both at the same time, where we'll each read for about 15 minutes from our own books. And then the two of us will be in conversation for about 15 minutes or so after that.
So give us a tease about In Our Other Lives. Tell us a little bit about it and how you came to write the book.
So In Our Other Lives is a story mostly about siblings and grief, lost loves, faith, and the desire to disappear. But it's all told from the perspective of an FBI domestic spying campaign. So it's a little bit of a twist on a somewhat more familiar domestic stories. So I came to write the book where a lot of these characters, the main characters, Elizabeth and Nick, where I'd been writing stories about them for 15 years or so, ever since I was an undergrad at UNL. And like, I could just never really make the story work into a novel that felt like it was any good. But in 2014, I started a fellowship in Stuttgart, Germany at a place called Akademie Schloss Solitude. And that was just a few months after Edward Snowden had released all the information on how deeply and how widely the U.S. government was spying on its own citizens, largely without permission. So I think I just started thinking about the Snowden revelations and started thinking about Elizabeth and Nick's story and that new lens, and thinking about their tragedies, where their relationships falling apart, where they lose a child. And instead of thinking about that from the inside out, just thinking about what if, you know, someone was watching that happen through their webcam, basically, or spying on them through their phones. And did that kind of put a different spin on their domestic tragedy, knowing that someone was watching?
It's amazing to me. I wonder about you personally and in your process. When someone comes up with an idea like that to cast something in a certain way, you have an idea of who these characters are, but now you've seen them through this different lens. How do you then turn that into your novel?
I think a lot of it was just finding like the perspective part of it, like how to tell that story, but also then the voice of it. And that's always the hardest part with any project, is just thinking like, who is actually telling this story and who are they telling it to? And then is it entertaining to hear this person tell a story? Like, I mean, that's always the most important part of a story, I think, not so much the plot of it or the details, but, you know, just who's telling it and is it entertaining in that kind of way. So I was kind of lucky during this process too, where before I'd gone to Germany, I was trying to read a lot of German literature just to be, I don't know, it kind of seemed polite to know more about the German canon since I was going there and they were flying me over there and everything. But I came across this novelist named Uwe Jonsson, who wrote a book called Speculations about Jakob. And it was somewhat similar. This was set in the 1960s in East Germany with the Stasi was spying on him and his family. But I kind of made that connection then between what happened then and what was happening now. And that helped a lot just to give me an idea about how to structure the book, to have this other, you know, novel that I love so much to model after, and to think about the voice of the narrator and these inspectors, these kind of federal agents from his novel and from my novel, to try to like carve out that space to have an interesting voice and an interesting storyteller to tell this story.
Tud Wheeler is the author of In Our Other Lives, and he's one of two authors hosted in an online event by Francie and Finch. That event is coming up November 18th. Tud Wheeler, thanks for talking with me.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
The other author is Cassandra Montag, who grew up in central Nebraska but is now based in Omaha. Her first novel is After the Flood, and she joins me now to talk about this event. Cassandra, it's great to talk with you.
It's great to talk with you. Thank you for having me.
Ted explained a little bit about the format of the event. Have you talked or worked with author Tud Wheeler before?
I have. Yeah, actually, we both went to Creighton for our master's degree. And so I met him there in writing workshops. And after we graduated, we actually formed kind of a writer's group where we would exchange each other's work and critique each other's work. And so I've done other events with Ted. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of his.
The book, After the Flood, it's your first novel, and listeners to this podcast can actually hear your conversation with All About Books host Pat Leach as well. I know that the two of you talked about how you started the book, that you were pregnant and having these nightmares when you got the idea. That's an interesting way to start a book.
It was one of those experiences where the premise for the book just was so strong and visceral, and it took hold of my imagination. And I think that really helps, especially for a first book, because you're learning the ropes, you're learning your craft, and it really helps to have an idea that you're incredibly passionate about. And so I feel fortunate that I had, you know, that sort of really visceral experience of these dreams to kind of propel me forward and give me a lot of narrative material.
What comes after that? I mean, as you start another novel, if you don't have that visceral experience, where does the inspiration come from?
I feel like I've been lucky in that come by inspiration and come by ideas quite easily. I'm always pulling from my life, from other things that I've seen or experienced, whether it be something, you know, that I read about in a magazine or something, you know, if a friend is telling me about an interesting experience they had traveling. You know, there are all these stories that are always sort of reaching out and begging to be explored. So I do feel like there's always kind of this wealth to dip into, but I do also think that as you become more experienced as a writer, you can lean a little bit more on, like I said, on craft and on your ability to try to develop an idea into something bigger. So it can start out really small. You can use those years of experience to really develop it. I think it was Picasso who said about his paintings, I start with an idea and then it becomes something else. And I love that because I think that captures what creativity is like we all start with inspiration or we start with an idea, and that is huge. It's hugely helpful, but that's where the ability of working on that idea comes into play, because then it's going to become bigger. It's going to become something else.
So can you tell us about something that might be in the works?
My second novel that I'm working on is a psychological thriller. I'm not saying a lot about it yet, but it is set in the sandhills of Nebraska, and it revolves around a series of murders that take place at a children's home.
We'll look forward to more information about that. After the flood was written, after Nebraska did experience some significant flooding, and now we're all experiencing this pandemic, as a writer, what's been your experience of writing this book and then trying to promote it and talk about it during some pretty seriously challenging times?
In some ways, it's been, you know, both on one hand, of course, incredibly sad to see the great loss that people have experienced with the flooding that went on a couple years back, and then, of course, now with the pandemic. At the same time, I think it reminds us of the power of literature and the power of stories to help people to come together, to have something shared that they can discuss in a way that can be representative of something universal. So, you know, I'm thinking of when we go through tough times, it can be helpful to see a character who goes through tough times and experiences some form of healing. Just being able to experience that through a story, for me, often gives me a sense of hope. It gives me a sense of perspective. It doesn't make everything better. It doesn't change the fact that people are suffering, but I do think that we can draw a lot of strength in storytelling. And so promoting my book during these sort of difficult events has reminded me of that.
Are there some characters or stories that have been that for you?
Yeah, you know, what immediately comes to mind is actually Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which is another post-apocalyptic novel. And it's quite dark, and the character goes through horrors in that book. But there's also this beauty woven throughout, and the beauty is found in the love between the two main characters, the love of the father and his son. I really look to books like that as inspiration for my own work, because my own work also can be a little bit dark. It can have violence in it. It can have loss. But I always wanted to also have great beauty and great love and this sort of demonstration of the human spirit and how much it can overcome.
Well, I'm sure participants in this event will have many more questions for you in this Zoom book event hosted online by Francie and Finch Bookshop. And that is on November 18th at 5:30 p.m. We'll have a link to more on the Friday Live page of our website at netnebraska.org. Cassandra Montag is the author of After the Flood. Cassandra, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Next on this week's podcast, I'm joined by a Lincoln, Nebraska native, the next Nebraskan to receive national recognition via television reality show. Sam Stacy performed a cover of James Taylor's Fire and Rain on The Voice and landed on Team Blake after Blake Shelton was the first of the four coaches on the show to turn his chair around. Sam Stacy graduated from Lincoln Southeast. Sam, it's so great to meet you.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for being part of our Friday Live Extra this week. Now, I know there's things that we can't talk about with the show that have yet to be released. So first, I guess, just congratulations on your success so far.
Thanks so much. It's really been wild. Like this whole last week, so many people have reached out and like, people I haven't talked to in years. And it's been crazy.
But you've known for some time what we all just recently saw. Was it weird kind of holding on to that information and not being able to tell anybody?
Yeah, I had to be pretty sneaky about outcomes. And I still have to be pretty sneaky about outcomes because they film certain parts of it before and then do the live sections where the people actually vote. And so those haven't been filmed yet, but other things have been filmed.
In the past, you know, we've had folks like Josh Hoyer and Hannah Houston on shows like this. And they were performing in front of live audiences, but that's a little bit different now. So we kind of see these little boxes with audience on the screen. What was your experience as you were singing that James Taylor song? Who's in the room?
In the room, it's all very COVID safe. So you just sort of walk into a room, come in one way, leave the other direction. Everybody backstage has a mask. You have a mask on until right before you step onto the stage, and then I get onto the stage and it's just the four coaches and like a jumbotron behind them with the audience is like zooming in behind them.
Let's learn just a little bit about you because you've performed in front of some live audiences before. You graduated from Lincoln Southeast. I'm curious about before that, though. Did you grow up in Lincoln?
Yep, I was born in Lincoln and grew up in Lincoln. I did a bunch of different choirs in Lincoln growing up. And then at Southeast, I was in the Singing Nights, Night Sounds, and Ars Nova choirs. So I definitely had the music stuff going on. I was also doing a lot of musical theater when I was younger in Lincoln at the Community Playhouse and at Pinewood Bowl.
So very familiar with the vocal music scene around here.
Yeah.
Now, there's loads of videos of you on your Twitter account singing and playing guitar. So when did the guitar first come into your life?
When I was about 12, my grandparents bought me a guitar for Christmas, and I didn't ask for it or anything. I think they just saw I had been playing a lot of Guitar Hero, the video game. They gave me the guitar, and I started to play it every once in a while, and then as high school hit, I started to play it a whole lot, and then just started playing more and more and more and playing with other people and going to open mics, and it just snowballed.
And we saw you, of course, doing a cover song. Do you write your own music?
I've got some stuff on Spotify and hopefully have some stuff out here soon. There's a little bit of contractual kind of things where you can't release music at certain times, but whenever I can, I've got new stuff to put out.
Sam, what inspired you in the first place to try out for The Voice?
Well, the pandemic hit and my day job was playing music about 3 or 4 times a week at restaurants and bars and country clubs and wineries and all that. But since the pandemic hit, I wasn't doing any of that anymore. And I got a direct message on Instagram from a casting department that casts for The Voice. I don't know exactly how they found me. I don't know whether they came to a show or searched my stuff online. I don't know. But I responded to it thinking like, oh, that'd be something that would be cool to do during this time when I can actually do it because I'm not playing gigs every day.
That's amazing. So were you before then just making your living with those gigs?
Yeah, that was my full-time thing.
Amazing. So this opportunity came just at the right time.
It was pretty serendipitous how it all, like, just the opportunity cost to do it was so low because the gigs were going and then they just stopped. And so, or not completely stopped, but almost completely stopped.
When you sang that James Taylor song, Fire and Rain, Blake said he didn't want a bunch of vocal pyrotechnics kind of thing. He just wanted to believe you. And I really loved that statement. How did that make you feel?
That's the line that really resonated with me because Kelly was talking about bringing it up and bringing the, like, getting that upper register to shine a little bit and pushing that. And that's all well and good, but I knew if I did that, I would be competing against a bunch of people that are really, really good at that. And I don't think that is my strongest suit.
What is your strongest suit? How do you describe your music to people?
I listened to a lot of John Mayer growing up, so there's a lot of that sort of soul, pop, R&B influence kind of there. More modern influences have been like Daniel Caesar, which is an R&B artist, and a bit of Frank Ocean as well, which is also in that R&B area. I think most of my music is still guitar-driven, so I write most of my songs on an acoustic guitar, just sitting down, and so you can hear that throughout the composition of it. It's not so much like a electronic part in the background or anything. It's still mostly guitar driven. Subject matter, I tend to be more introspective with the lyrics. It tends to be about personal experiences and trying to make those personal experiences, find like the nuggets in them that overarch between people that other people can relate to and bring those through.
That second part of your answer kind of answers another question I was going to ask you, which was how you picked that James Taylor song. I was hearing you just now list all these R&B artists, and I thought, well, how did he choose James Taylor? But there's a lot of personal, you know, and kind of reality in that James Taylor song.
Those are more modern influences I was listening, like older influences, James Taylor and Bill Withers would be big influences as well then. So you get that kind of singer-songwriter aspect of it, but blended into like a more musical, like, makes me want to move a little bit sometimes.
Sam, I'm sure we're all excited to find out what comes next for you, and I hope that we get to talk to you again as more episodes are released.
I hope so, too. I'm excited to watch them.
Sam Stacy, he's a Lincoln, Nebraska contestant on The Voice, currently on Team Blake. Sam, congrats again, and thanks so much for talking with me.
Hey, thanks so much.
The Friday Live Extra is a weekly podcast from NET Radio. Production help from Dave Hughes. Our theme music is by Alexios Anest. You can learn more about people and groups involved in arts and humanities in Nebraska by listening to Friday Live, broadcast statewide each week on NET Radio, streaming audio and video online at netnebraska.org, and also available as a podcast. I'm Genevieve Randall.